Welcome to Sales Secrets, new shows daily. Subscribe now.
Welcome to Sales Secrets with your host, Brandon Bordanson. And today I'm thrilled to have with me and my new guest, Andy Paul, the author of one of the best-selling books, Sell Without Selling Out. I love that title. He's also the host of one of the famous sales enablement podcasts called the Sales Enablement Podcast. And now he is running his own consulting agency where he helps salespeople, sales teams, marketers, and entrepreneurs learn how to sell without selling out, leveraging empathy, kindness, and new strategies to get to what the buyer wants right now to get the deal done without sounding salesy or slimy. Hey, Andy, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Brandon, thanks for having me. By the way, thank you for the introduction. One of the best introductions I've had. So appreciate it.
Thank you. This is why I love Andy. So Andy's been doing show production forever. His show for his podcast has got over 2 million downloads. He's got a LinkedIn audience size of over 200,000 people following him. So we've got a lot to unpack. Right now, half the show is going to be around his new book, Sell Without Selling Out. Because in today's virtual remote selling world, you need to sell without being slimy or salesy. And Andy's got all the secrets to that we're going to go over. And then the other half of the show, I'm going to ask Andy to personally share with us, all of you out there in this remote world, one of the fastest ways to sell products, to sell services, is to build your following, to build your audience, to get in front of people before they need what you have to sell with them. Andy is a guy that built a massive audience, millions of downloads, hundreds of thousands of followers. We need to learn what are his secrets, his dirty little secrets I want to know about. So Andy, talk to us about this book. What's the premise of Sell Without Selling Out? I've read it, but pretend like you're talking to someone that hasn't opened it up yet.
I divide the sales world sort of into two mindsets, if you will, or two ways of behaving. One is selling out and one is selling in. And selling out is when sort of the stereotypical sales behavior when sellers put their own interests ahead of the buyer and they think that their job is just to go out and persuade somebody to buy their product. And when you get in that persuasion mode, if you think that's your job, just to persuade somebody to buy your product, you don't really listen to them about what's important to them. And it doesn't really matter what they need because your job is to persuade them to buy your product. And it just sets you off in the cycle of sales behaviors that we talk about. So selling in, your job, to contrast with your job not being to persuade somebody, your job is to listen to your buyer, understand the things that are most important to them in terms of challenges they face and the outcomes they want to achieve, and then help them get that. And that leads you to a whole different set of behaviors in terms of how you help the buyer make a decision in that context.
That's great, Andy. And I know a big part, you've got a section around secrets to selling to humans and really identifying what your buyer's needs are, right? Instead of persuading, you just mentioned listening. Talk to me about what are the secrets to figuring out what your buyer's needs are and then customizing everything to that.
Yeah. So I define the book 4 pillars to selling in, right? This is the foundational pillars for you to be able to start with: their connection, curiosity, understanding, generosity. So you start with your connection. You have to be able to connect with another human being, build some level of rapport, which leads to the ability to start building some credibility and, most importantly, trust. Because unless there's an element of trust that exists with the buyer, they're not going to open up to you. When you start asking your questions, if that trust doesn't exist, you're not going to get the information you want. And there's a sort of a fallacy that many sellers believe that if they ask the questions, they're going to get answers from some buyers. It doesn't work that way, right? So you need to build that level of trust. That opens the door to your curiosity. And the book outlines 6 different types of questions that you can use to dig deeper with the buyer, really understand what's driving, both at a corporate level, a team level, and a personal level. And when you get that, have the ability, that trust and the ability to ask those questions, then you start, really the buyer starts giving you the permission to start influencing them. And that's really what you're trying to get to. Is the buyer says, I'm going to listen to your insights. I am going to listen to your questions and think about them. Because what is the role of the seller is it's to make the buyer think, right? I mean, what problem, people always say, buyers don't want to talk to salespeople. actually, they, not that they want to, it's they need to, right? Is they're all living in their own little bubble, their own little world, and they need somebody to come in with an outside perspective to challenge them, to have them think more deeply and broadly at the problems they're trying to solve and the outcomes they're trying to achieve. You need a salesperson to do that. But you can only do that if you've made that connection, built that trust, you're asking the great questions, you're listening to understand, and then you're helping the buyer make progress through their buying process.
Mm, I love that. And you said there's six secret questions, right?
Well, not secrets. I mean, I don't think there are any secrets in sales. I think it's just our job as thought leaders to help people think differently about sales, right? Examples of questions that I think are really powerful to use.
The audience could just dive right in and start putting these things to use.
Yeah. So one of my favorites that I use when I sell, I call them impact questions, where you're asking the buyer to quantify the impact of making a change or of not making a change. So, yeah, instead of saying ask the customer, well, what would you like to do ABC? Well, why would you ever ask that? Because sure, they might want to do ABC, but you say, well, so if you could do ABC, what would the impact be on whatever the relevant metric is, top line growth, bottom line growth, cost reduction, whatever. But you ask us, you force the customer, not force, but you're triggering the customer to think more deeply about, what would the impact be? So they start quantifying the impact. And, is that dollars? Is it units? Whatever that is. And so that's just one example. Another example of a question is always think about trade-offs. When the customer's evaluating different products, but more importantly, evaluating different options they have for solving the problems they have and achieving their desired outcomes, they're making trade-offs, whether it's features, whether it's price, whatever. So phrase questions as trade-offs. So, what would the impact be if you could do, and you're sort of combining questions. So what would the impact be if you could do ABC as opposed to XYZ? Now, what impact would that have on top line growth? So you're always trying to frame this as the customer think more deeply about outcomes.
Mm, I love it. And Andy, what you said there, getting them to think differently and outcome focused, one of the things that came to mind that I know our team of 500 always challenge with is what we call the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are selling into an organization and coaching teams to sell into an organization, one of the biggest reasons why people don't move on something is because they just no decision. They don't make a decision. They don't buy. Because sellers haven't created a way to overcome changing from the status quo. How can you sell without selling out and really disrupt using outcome-focused selling like you're talking about the status quo, which could be one of the biggest objections of all time?
Right. Well, that's why you start early on with questions like impact questions and trade-off questions is the customer, it's no longer sort of are we going to do this or not? They're thinking in context of, well, what's this going to mean for us when we make a change? I think the big reason is customers sort of end up at a no decision is they haven't taken that final step to say, okay, in dollars and cents, what is the impact of making the decision on our business? In what dimensions, and then whatever dimensions is important. And that is the failure point. And they don't get to that point because the sellers aren't helping them get to that point. They're not asking the questions that force them and trigger them to think and then come back with more questions, which trigger more questions from the seller. It's just, if we get too scripted and we go by the playbook, it's all very superficial. The superficial doesn't move people and inspire people to take action. So from a qualification standpoint, as a seller, if you haven't gotten the buyer to the point where they've done their internal business case based on the options that you've presented to them, right? They're not ready to make a decision. So that has to be on sort of your personal selling process. One of the key milestones is, has the buyer thought this through? Have they done the justification? Because what they do is, again, too sidetracked, but this is what buyers, when they're doing their investigation, they create multiple options for solving problems and achieving the outcomes they want.
Of course, hopefully, right? Like any logical person would do.
Right. And hopefully you've influenced what most of those options are. Right. I like to say there should be a Brandon size hole in their options, right? That you plug right into because you've influenced them that your product and service is the one they want to buy.
I love that. Yeah.
But if they haven't taken it to that next step to say, okay, because you know, you early on, you want to be giving them pricing. You want people to understand the context and the value that you're providing in the context of the pricing that you offer. They're not doing that justification. Yeah, you're going to get no decision.
Mm. And what would be some of the ways that you've leveraged or have helped other people leverage getting that brand in size hole, right? They're ensuring that they're in the option set when they're looking at, okay, I've got a problem. Here are the possible options to solve that problem. What's a great way for me early on at or before the problem even exists so that I'm in the consideration set and hopefully the number one answer to solving the problem.
Right.
Like what would you do?
It boils down to understanding. Is if you make the buyer feel understood that you really understand problems and the outcomes they want to desire or the desired outcome, you're a step ahead. And that's your goal, is to make sure you keep asking questions, keep posing questions to the buyer that again cause them to think more deeply about it. And I can't even begin to recall, and I write about this in the book, is how many times working for startups selling really big deals, that were like 30% or 50% of our revenue, right? As big deals for a small company. And I didn't really think we had a chance to win, but we won. And the buyer, when you ask them, why did we win? I said, because you made us feel understood.
If you enjoy Sales Secrets and you'd like to help out the show, go to the Apple Podcast app, the purple icon, and give us 5 stars. And if you haven't yet, please, please go give that a shot. Now back to the show.
And that's what you want. That's a critical milestone in your personal selling processes. Does the buyer feel like we understand them? Do they know that we understand what's really important to them? Could you stand up at a whiteboard and diagram out their requirements and have them say, yeah, you get it? And if you can do that, I said, you're a step ahead of everybody else, because most people don't want to go that extra mile. Most sellers say, very formulaic, playbook oriented, and so on. Mm-hmm. But if you just give free rein to your curiosity, to keep asking questions and validate what you think you know, right? And this is, I know a lot of companies do this. They talk about reflective listening as, feedback to the buyer. This is what I think I heard. That's important. But then sellers miss what I call the missing question, which is, I think, is one of the most important ones, is when you've got to that point where you think you've got a true understanding of what's important to the buyer, you've asked them to say, to confirm that you'll get it. Just when you think you have it all figured out, you ask this question. Got it. So what are we missing? Just when you think it's done, throw that question. What are we missing?
Mm.
And you'll be surprised what comes up, because suddenly the buyer now starts going, And you're going to learn something and understand something about them that no one else does. It's really powerful.
It sounds like a lot of the power of this approach is being extremely curious and having an innate interest and just fully understanding the motivations, the desires, the pains, the challenges, the problems, the goals. Let's just say you've got a new sales team or salespeople that join, set of new SDRs or AEs.
Right.
How do you coach them? Because everyone's remote now, right?
Right.
We're hiring all these new SDRs and AEs remote. You used to be able to be on the sales floor and be like, oh, okay, their discovery is poor, or they're not doing a good job really digging deeper into understanding the pain and the problems. Like, what would be some of the first ways that you would go about teaching someone to be curious, to be inquisitive?
Well, this is controversial in some quarters, but we've become a little too prescriptive, right?
Mm.
And
totally.
Right?
Read this script. Do this, right?
Yeah. And everybody sells differently. No one's going to be, not everybody's going to be at the same level of curiosity. I may be over-indexed on it on one end. And it's probably because, I think originally when I started my sales career, history major coming into a complex technical world, I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about business. So I over-indexed on curiosity because it helped me learn very quickly about the business and the product and the customers and so on. So for me, that's always been, I said, sort of the root of my selling, because yeah, I've always felt sort of unqualified in some regards for many of the jobs I had.
I can totally relate. Shit, I still feel unqualified, Andy.
Yeah.
Every day I'm waking up feeling unqualified.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know?
Absolutely. It never goes away. So curiosity is sort of my defense against that, and perhaps yours as well, is I just keep wanting to learn. And that is, you know, so important for sellers to feel like they have the autonomy to sort of go off script and to give free rein to their curiosity. You know, it was an interesting report that came out of a company called Box of Crayons, a consulting company in Toronto. It was founded by Michael Bungay Stanier.
What a name, by the way, Box of Crayons.
Yeah, it's a great, great little company. And they did a study on curiosity that came out, I think it was last year, 2021, where it talked about how, you know, people who are curious are considered to be disruptors, because in a negative way, oftentimes within organizations. I mean, how often have you had like a manager or maybe early in your career said, enough of the questions, just do what I told you, right? Or maybe you had a parent that did that. And it's like,
I tell this to my accountability coach. So I pay like three different coaches, and my accountability coach will ask me like 12 questions. And I'm like, no, just tell me why I keep quitting on my habits, that I need to eat healthy, go to the gym, not drink, all the jazz, right? He'll keep asking like, so why did you do that? How did it happen? Like, he goes like 20 questions deep, and it kills me. Go ahead. Keep going.
But that's sort of in line with it. I mean, there's this tendency to try to suppress curiosity among sellers. Is, yeah, just do this, right? These are things that are important. Just, you know, hit your numbers, hit the metrics. Well, what if the metrics don't fit with the way the person sells? What if, you know, curiosity requires, and making sure you really understand the buyer requires that, hey, you have fewer prospects that you're dealing with, but you're going to win a higher fraction of them. Well, yeah, people that sort of follow that mode oftentimes get looked down on, right? I mean, I was talking to somebody yesterday that was saying that, you know, she was being hammered by her boss because, you know, she wasn't putting out enough proposals. And I was like, yeah, she's putting out like a third to 40% of what everybody else does, but she's crushing her numbers.
Shit.
But they don't, but the manager's not, right? The manager's a little fearful because she's not doing what she's supposed to be doing. So, yeah, for training curiosity, it's you have to do some role plays, obviously. But you have to make people feel like they have the freedom to ask questions and to learn and not, you know, follow this rigid process. And I think that's where it starts, with the managers, making the managers feel enabled to give people that autonomy.
Yeah, I like it. Well, you know, it sparked what you were just saying there, audience tuning in and not just being scripted. I'm a big sports guy. I love NFL football. I love basketball. One of my favorite players is Tom Brady, for a number of reasons. and, you know, when I think about Tom Brady, if Belichick or his coach said, you can only run these three plays, he's never winning a Super Bowl. The guy is improvising with his offense, what he sees with the defense, what he sees with his players. Maybe he's supposed to run a passing route on the left side, and the wide receiver on the left side is going through a divorce, and he's a little worried about his mental headspace. He's like, okay, well, instead of running that play, I'm going to throw it to the right. Plus the defense is weak there. Like, it kind of reminded me of, you know, allowing the managers, guys, follow the scripts and the plays as a foundation. But in sales, you've got thousands of different plays you can run. Have the autonomy. It sounds like you said, have the autonomy to run whatever play you need to run, to go deep with the customer and really understand the needs and wants.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We have to understand is that if there are, let's say, you know, whatever the number is, 5 million salespeople in the world, there are 5 million distinct ways of selling. Yeah. and so as a manager, your job, and I talk about this in the book, you can be a boss or a leader. You can be a sales boss or a sales leader. And a sales leader understands that their job is to help a seller become the best version of themselves. Sales boss is just concerned with, hey, are you hitting your activity metrics? Are you doing sort of this base level stuff, even if it doesn't result in the types of results that you want or you need? And so I think we have this big gap, especially in the SaaS world, where win rates are so low, unbalanced. And it's not just in the SaaS world. I mean, there's a study, you know, SaaS world operates in general in sort of the 20% range of win rates of qualified opportunities. There was a book that came out recently called Strikingly Different Selling, written by some people from the Franklin Covey organization. Check that out. Yeah, a very interesting book. And they had commissioned this research firm to work with them, did some in-depth research survey, like over 10,000 companies. And they found that the average win rate on deals 100K and higher over thousands of 10, like 14,500 companies was 17%. Yeah.
And did they view that as good or bad?
Well, not as bad. I mean, I think anything below 50% is bad.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was just curious, right?
Like, yeah, I mean,
everyone views stuff differently, you know?
Well, I know. I mean, there's lots of sales leaders in the SaaS world, in the software world, that think 20% is fine because they're still growing, because they've, you know, perfected the top of funnel stuff so well. They got incredible deal flow, but they're just, you know, they don't really know how to sell. Hmm. Well, what do you do when the economy gets slow? What do you do when things, you know, inevitably there's business cycles and things get a little tougher, and there's suddenly, instead of having 15 competitors competing for, you know, $1 million worth of business, you got 15 competitors competing for $500,000 worth of business. Who's going to win?
I love it. By the way, audience, tuning in. So you got Andy Paul here, author of Sell Without Selling Out, host of the Sales Enablement Podcast. Two things I want you to do. Number one, obviously Sales Secrets is one of the best sales shows in the world. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and help us get to 1 million reviews. I think we're at 100 reviews. Drop a review, drop 5 stars, subscribe right now. While you're doing that, while you're tuned in, make sure you give Andy Paul a follow. He's got too many connections for him to add you as a friend request. Give him a follow right now. Follow me as well. We're going to ask one more question as it relates to Sell Without Selling Out, and then we're going to take a quick intermission break, and we're going to dive into Andy Paul's greatest secrets to building a massive brand online. So the last secret, Andy, right now we're going through extreme tumultuous times. The economy is crashing. Inflation is through the roof. Thousands upon thousands of companies are laying everyone off. Salespeople are distraught. Marketers are losing all of their budget. Companies are disappearing like the wind flying through. As sales leaders, I know you talk a lot about the book. Are you a sales leader or merely a boss? What are your secrets to being a great sales leader versus just being a boss, and especially leading during tough times that we're experiencing right now?
Right. So let's give one simple one, right? There's a lot of answers to it, but one simple one is, it said earlier, right? Our job as sellers is to listen to the buyer, understand the things that are most important to them, and then help them get that. If you're a sales leader, take that same charter. Your job is to listen to your sellers, the individuals, understand the things that are most important to them in terms of the challenges they're facing and the things they want to achieve in their life and their career, and then help them get that. And it's the same motion as if you're a seller, as if you're a sales leader. And if you do that, you're going to build sellers. You're going to help develop into people. You're going to build greater loyalty. You're going to have increased retention rates among your salespeople. You're going to get better outcomes because people will feel inspired to want to improve and become the best version of themselves. Wow. But if you think the answer in hard times is just double down on the activity metrics, then yeah, people can find other places to work.
Yeah, I've never said we just need to do more activity.
Yeah.
I'm at fault. hands up. I'm one of the leaders that like that says, hey, we need to do more activity, you know, but also you need to do these other things. I love the advice, Andy. I don't know why you struck a nerve with me there, where you're like, just like how you do discovery and pitch your prospects, you need to do that with your people as a sales leader. Because if you know their pain, their problems, their challenges, and you know their goals, dreams, and desires, everything that you do to lead them, you can leverage to help them go from A, broke to financially free, or, you know, sad to happy, or SDR to AE, whatever the goal is, right?
Yeah.
Like, damn, well, I never really thought about it in that purview.
Well, like, I'll provide another context for you. So, because this is kind of universal. So if you want to develop a better relationship with your partner or spouse, what do? You listen, understand the things that are most important to them, and then you help them get that. I mean, this is just good human behavior, right? And if we focus on being a good human, we listen to our buyers, understand the things that are most important to them, help them get that. you know, people that work for us. We listen to understand what's most important to them. We help them get that. Partners in life and so on. We listen to what's important to them. We help them get that. Pretty universal.
Amazing. Andy Paul, Sell Without Selling Out. Get his new book on Amazon today. Just go to Amazon, search Andy Paul or Sell Without Selling Out. You can pick up a new copy of the book, ebook, print, hardcover. Andy, do we have audio as well?
Oh, yeah. Narrated by me.
Narrated by the radio DJ voice himself, Andy Paul. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick intermission here, and then we're going to power back up to go through the marketing and branding secrets of a guy who's has got over 2 million downloads, 200,000 followers. It's something that I'd love to learn. Hopefully, it's something that you'd love to learn, too. Stay tuned now for a quick message from our sponsor. We are hiring here at Seamless.ai. That is right. We have over 850 positions open right now, hundreds of SDRs, hundreds of AEs, 50 engineers across every department in the company. We're hiring nearly 850 positions this year. So if you want to work for Seamless.ai, help the world connect opportunity, apply at Seamless.ai/careers, Seamless.ai/careers, Seamless.ai/careers.
Thanks for joining Sales Secrets. New shows daily. Subscribe now.